Welcome to the National Bicycle Greenway's Mountain Mover podcast series. Here you will get up close and personal with people who are taking giant steps for the betterment of cyclists and for the planet itself. We visited with Tim Brummer, the former aerospace engineer who builds bikes so fast that even a middle-of-the-pack roadie can blow the doors off Lance Armstrong on one. In his quest to go even faster, you will hear why his company, Lightning Bikes, supports the National Bicycle Greenway and our upcoming bike ride across the United States. Hey, Tim, how are you going today?
I'm doing quite well, thank you.
All right. Tim, I'm going to jump right into things here. We've all heard the name Tim Brummer as he associates with recumbent cycling. The name that comes up in most people's minds is speed. But before we get into any of that, if we started building the world's fastest production bike, what were you doing with your life? What was going on?
Well, I mean, the whole story actually goes back to when I was in college. That's kind of where I got the first idea, actually, to make what today is the Lightning F40 bike. Back then in college, we, as part of a club project, we built the White Lightning human-powered vehicle, a fully fared tandem, had three wheels. And we went out and won the Abbott Prize with that. We were the first HPV to go over 55 miles an hour. And then the next year, we went over 60 miles an hour. But anyway, working on that thing was built strictly for a racetrack. You know, you couldn't ride it on the street. It was fully enclosed. It was too low. You couldn't. The turning radius was like 300 feet, you know.
Tim, you said the Abbott Prize?
Yeah.
Okay.
Abbott Prize. It was $3,000.
Okay.
And, right. Yeah, it was that. This was, you know, what, 30 years ago now. But anyway, as part of that, you know, we would ride it around, you know, just on some local streets where there was no car traffic. And the thing was, you know, it was comfortable, it was fun, and, of course, fast. But it just wasn't street practical. So that's kind of where I got the idea of coming up with a different design that, you know, could be ridden every day on the street for commuting or for whatever reason.
Okay.
And, you know, over the next 10 years, basically, I kind of worked on that idea. And so once I got out of college, I started working in the aerospace industry. First, I was working for Rockwell on the space shuttle program. And then later, I moved up to where I'm at now, which is Lompoc, California. I was working at Vandenberg Air Force Base on the they got different rocket programs out here that I was working on. So I guess the short answer to your question is, you know, when I first, you know, came out with the finished or final version for sale, I was working out here at Vandenberg Air Force Base.
Okay.
As an aerospace engineer.
Now, which colleges were you at? Cal Poly?
No, it was Northrop University. That's down by in Los Angeles near LA Airport. It's a small private university.
Is it like an engineering college?
Yeah, it's kind of like MIT or Caltech, basically.
Okay, all right. And was called again Norfolk?
No, Northrop.
Okay.
Yeah, Northrop.
Cal Northrop?
The same guy, yeah, Jack Northrop, the same guy who started the airplane company, he started this engineering college also.
Huh, wow.
Yeah.
So is that like a real kind of a premier university, real tough to get into, like MIT or like
Well, it's not as tough, but
no?
The curriculum, I would say, is similar.
Huh.
So, you know, the graduates are pretty highly regarded in the aerospace industry.
Okay. So it kind of had kind of an aerospace kind of it educated
right.
For that, if you will. Okay.
Right.
Wow. Awesome. I never knew that, Tim.
Okay.
Well, so you're a Cal Northrop grad.
Right, exactly.
Now, when you say Cal Northrop, was that...
Yeah, it's not Cal.
It's not part
of the state university system.
Okay.
It's located in California, but...
Okay, just Northrop University.
Northrop University.
So how many people were in that school?
Oh, it's pretty small. Maybe student body, I don't know, 1,000 to 2,000, something like that.
Yeah, so how many people did you graduate with, would you say? A couple hundred?
My class was like 50 people.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you get pretty special attention, I would think, huh?
Right, exactly, yeah. It was, awesome. It was great. You really learned your stuff.
Wow. Okay. So now we've got, you're a pioneer of the recumbent movement. You've been there way back when, Dick was doing his thing with the Avatar, even, you know, and
Right. Well, he started a little bit before us,
You know, Gardner Martin was there when you were banging around and stuff like that. And really, he was kind of your arch rival, as it were. And
For quite a while.
Yeah, and
yeah, we beat them. They competed for the Abbott Prize also. You know, Easy Racers.
Uh huh.
Beat them for the Abbott Prize, and then they ended up beating us for the DuPont Prize.
Was Rotator racing then too? At that time, no. Steve? No. Okay. He was too busy building Gardner's bikes, I guess.
Yeah, huh? I think it was after because Rotator, he was living in Lompoc about the time I moved here and started doing my stuff. And he saw what I was doing and got into it at that point.
Ah,
so I guess you could say I inspired him.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. That's pretty good. Okay. Now, it's funny. You look at like the Easy Racer, and that design came out of Gardner's head, as I think did a lot of the early day recumbent designs that were out there. Have you ever built a bike that way?
No.
So they've all been first on CAD computer aided design.
Well, they didn't have CAD back then.
No.
You know, this was in the 80s.
Uh huh.
At least they didn't have CAD you could buy and put on a PC.
Okay.
You know, with a giant mainframe kind of stuff.
Uh huh.
So no, I just used pencil and paper, which is how everybody was designing back then.
Pencil and paper.
Drafting board.
We're using a.
And I did a lot of engineering analysis, you know, calculations to refine the design to get it, you know, lightweight, efficient, good climbing, all that stuff.
You ever had access to wind tunnel testing at all?
Oh yeah, we did that.
Oh really?
Yeah, absolutely. We did that for the White Lightning back when I was, like I said, we built that back when I was at the university, and they had a wind tunnel there.
This was at Northrop.
Right, exactly.
Wow.
And so we used that for the White Lightning, and then later I used it when I was doing the, actually it was for the X2. I never did any for the F40, but for X2 we did. And then actually what I did later, for like the F40 and some of the other bikes, we did coast down test, which is similar to wind tunnel testing. But you take the full scale bike and you coast down a hill, and you get the speed, you know, record the speed at various points, and from that you can learn a lot of the same things that you would in a wind tunnel.
Well, that's what Gardner did a lot with Freddie. I've been on some of those rides coming down out of the Santa Cruz Mountains, the coast down, roll down tests. But but you're saying that's kind of that's as maybe not as sophisticated as a wind tunnel, but you can get a lot of valuable data from that, huh?
Right, exactly.
And you ended up yourself relying on that? Wow. That's fascinating. Okay, that said, how long have you been in business then, officially? I know that you've had this idea since college. I know that you worked in the aerospace industry. When did you open the doors for Lightning Cycle? When did you take the plunge?
Full-time was after I left the company I was working for, Martin Marietta, out of Vandenberg. And that was 1991. So it's been 20 years now.
Wow. Okay. Now, your factory is located off the beaten track, as you said, in Lompoc?
Yes.
Why all the way out there?
Well, that's where I was living at the time,
because
that's where Vandenberg Air Force Base is. It's just 10 miles from here. I was working in Vandenberg, had my house here, and I'd already started, you know, in my garage making some prototypes and getting just a few test pieces out there. Like, for example, Pete Pinsares had one. He was riding to work every day. So, I'd already, kind of started the business part-time, I guess you could say. It wasn't, real serious, but I was working on it, in my off hours. And so that's why, because I was just already living here. And it's actually a great place to ride bikes, because Lance Armstrong, when he was riding, mm-hmm. you know, doing a tour, mm-hmm. His team would come here in the wintertime and train.
Really?
Yeah, huh. They would come to this area.
Well, I've been out in that area. That's, you're real close to where the league used to have their big rally down by that fairground.
I don't know who puts it on now. Maybe it's not the league, but
the Great Western Bike Rally.
Yeah, Great Western Bike Rally.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, right. We're just you know, an hour from there.
Yeah, but a lot of scrub oak, not real interesting looking stuff, if I remember correctly.
Right. Yeah.
But and not a lot of real big ominous hill work type of situations.
Well, we've got some around there if you know where to go.
Yeah. Okay.
But then there's flat areas too, so you got your pick, you know.
Great.
So, yeah, and they have the Solvang Century here, which is...
You know, Solvang, correct, yeah, whichever it is.
Right, Solvang Century. It's called, you know, one of the biggest century rides in the country.
The Wildflower Century?
Right, that too.
Okay, yeah. Now, let's come back and talk about Lompoc for a second. I know that, like, for example, Platt Green, one of our sponsors over at Blue Sky, he moved just from the Oregon desert to the Oregon coast, and he spent a lot of time identifying new sources for his materials, his machine work, his prototype work, and all that kind of stuff. What do you have out there in Lompoc, really, in the way of talent that pre-exists? Is it a lot of engineers that have made their way out to Lompoc?
Oh, absolutely. Because,
oh, really?
Well, for one thing, you know, we have the Air Force base here, which is launching rockets. You've got, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of aerospace engineer types, mm-hmm. Technical types. And then just down south in Goleta, there's a lot of high technology computer
software. Did you say Goleta?
Yeah, Goleta.
By Santa Barbara, you mean?
Yeah, let's just say Santa Barbara then. There's a lot of, you know, high tech software companies down there.
So you can get materials there and things like that? The lightweight metals and stuff you need are all really available?
Well, not here in town, but...
No?
You know, Los Angeles, it's the center of the aerospace industry in the U.S. So it's
and how far, are you, you know, how far are you from L.A.?
Well, that's only like 100 miles. So,
100 miles,
So, you know, that's where I get my carbon fiber from, you know, all my composite materials, you know, specialized tubing, all that kind of stuff. It's really easy to get. So.
Okay. Got it. Now I'm starting to understand a little bit. How big is Lompoc in terms of population?
50,000 people.
50,000. And do you find
that... small. It's just the right size.
Good.
You know, having a bike-friendly city, basically.
And there's a lot of engineers living there,
Absolutely, yeah.
So you've got some...
And, of course, we don't hire a lot of engineers, per se. Mostly it's
Yeah, like
craft.
Your welders and stuff and things.
Yeah, exactly.
Where are they coming
welders
from?
Welders and fabricators. Yeah, they're all here, you know.
Really?
Some of them are ex-aerospace.
Wow. Okay. Well, that gives me a new respect for Lompoc then. I hadn't known that before. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So when did your bike become the first... I can't remember what year that was that you won the race across America.
That'd be 1989.
Okay.
Yeah.
And just for those who are the uninitiated, what was your elapsed time?
5 days, 1 hour, and we went 3,000 miles from Los Angeles to New York. So, and over 20 years later, we still hold the record. It hasn't been broken.
And who was racing? Who was racing that race? Were you in that race? I can't remember.
No, I wasn't riding. I was a crew member.
Did Pete Pinceres race?
Yeah, it was Pete Pinceres, his brother Jim Pinceres, Bob Forney, and Michael Coles.
Wow.
And they were a great team. They were great riders. Uh-huh, that's why the record still stands. Because, you know, we had the bike was fast, but the riders were even faster. You know, they were experienced and strong. They knew what they were doing. So
you were saying Pete had one of your bikes?
Well, yeah, after the race, he kept one.
Okay, but before that, he hadn't trained on one before, though?
No.
Okay,
no.
So these guys didn't really have bent muscles. They were more...
but I got them all a bike, you know, maybe 3 months before the race.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah.
And they blew that thing off in five days.
Yep, 5 days.
And it seems like a lot of rules were changed after that race.
If anything, the rules were changed to make it faster.
Oh, really?
Yeah, before, when we changed riders, you had to stop the bike, and let's say you had two bikes, because we did during the race. We had two bikes. Well, when we were changing riders / bikes, the first bike had to come to a complete stop and do a hand touch to the second guy, and then he could take off. Now you can do a rolling, what's called a rolling exchange, where they can both be going at full speed and just the wheels got to overlap.
Okay. So before, what I mean, when you're talking before 5 days.
When we were changing riders, you had to come to complete stop. Now it's a rolling exchange. Yeah.
So what is that going to gain you? About maybe 30 seconds or so?
maybe a minute each time.
A minute? Yeah, really? Okay, yeah. I guess maybe
but
from
you're
the
slowing
start.
Down and then okay, starting yeah. again.
Well, even when you're looking at 5 days, I don't think that.
Well, when you're doing 100 yeah. stops. You know,
but isn't there something
that's,
about.
That's an hour or so, you know. What's that?
Wasn't there something about they don't want you? I know at least when it's not the relay situation. Are they still doing relays?
Oh, yeah.
And relays with recumbents?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, we did it again a few years back, 2004, with another team. And basically a faster bike. But, and the rules, like I said, the rules have been changed where you can, you know, help your speed.
Right.
But the drawback is now that the country's more developed, you know, 20 years later.
So there's more traffic lights and things. Got it. Okay, yeah.
And the course was different, too. You know, that the course wasn't quite as fast. So we wanted to set a new record, but we didn't. We were a couple hours shy of the old one.
Oh, really? Yeah. Just a couple hours shy. Wow. So 5 days and 5 days, 3 hours or something like that?
Yeah, 5 days, 4 hours.
Wow. Gee, who was racing that?
Well, it was Jim Kern, Tim Woodenberg, Bob Forney again, but of course he's older now. So he's a little bit slower.
Yeah.
And, what's the guy from Canada? I forgot his name. My mind.
Yeah, I can't think of that as either. I'm not. Yeah. I don't really follow the upright.
The guy who rides the Varna.
Okay. Okay. That's not coming to me. But I know who you mean.
Oh, you can't remember either.
Yeah,
Sam
Whittingham. That's right. Okay, got it.
Yeah.
Now, he's going how fast per mile now?
You mean the top speed record?
Yeah.
Yeah, 82 was the last I heard.
82. Have you ever thought about trying for that one with one of your bikes?
Yeah, you know, when I've got nothing else to think about.
Okay.
I haven't thought about it seriously. So.
Okay. That's a whole other conversation, I guess. We can maybe talk about some other time.
Right.
Tell me what at your website you're saying that you're the owner of 20 world records. Can you kind of broad brush?
Well, we've set that many. Some have since been Eclipse, but we still have eight or 10.
Okay. So what are they? Just as kind of a real broad brush.
Oh, boy, there's so many. I got to go with.
Okay. Do you know?
Well, like I was saying in the first place, you know, the ones that we set, top speed record, you know, first over 55 miles an hour, first over 60. Actually, we were the first to break 50 miles an hour also.
First to break 50?
There wasn't any prize money for that. But,
wow, yeah, awesome. So you were the first to break 55.
Well, first it was 50. We were the first over 50.
Yeah.
First over 55. First over 60.
Wow. Okay. And then I guess Gardner became the big kid in the block because he was the first to break 65, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Okay. And how close were you to kind of getting ahead of him on that one? He beat you huh?
They were first. That's all.
Were you real close?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think back then.
Wow,
that's a long time ago.
That's so amazing. I know it has
because he went up to a high altitude
Right,
to
up
do
there
that.
In the
yeah,
desert.
Yeah, but we were, at low altitude, this was in Indianapolis, we were close to 60. So,
really?
This was single rider, you know.
Right, exactly, the previous.
Yeah, the previous record we had set going over 60 was with two guys.
It was for two guys?
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
it was a tandem.
Uh-huh. Right. Okay, got it.
Whereas
yeah.
the Mont Prize was strictly for a single rider.
Did you race ever up there in the Nevada desert? Where was it, Battle Mountain? Did you ever race up there?
Been.
No? Okay.
No.
It was funny, when I went across the United States in 19, on the Eagle last 2009, I rode through Battle Mountain. And that's become kind of a little bit of a tourist draw up there, you know? And,
right.
And there's not much going on up there at all. It's pretty bleak.
Well, yeah, it's in the middle of nowhere.
Indeed it is.
Got some ranching, and that's about it.
Yeah, so. if that. Something about your bikes. I were a low to middle ranking cyclist, for example, on a regular bike, and I buy one of your bikes. Is there a good chance I'd be at the front of the pack on one?
Yes.
There is. Okay.
Yeah.
And
if you're an average cyclist.
Really? So I'm an average cyclist. Yeah. I'm going to be quick if I'm on one of your bikes.
Yes.
Really? Huh. No doubt. And is that how come?
Yeah, you'll definitely move up in the pack.
Okay. And I'm talking upright now. I'm talking an upright cyclist.
Oh yeah.
Really?
Yeah. You switch from an upright to one of our bikes, you'll definitely move up in the pack.
Hmm. And so all of a sudden, man, I'm going to be.
And you know that. The biggest advantage is not so much the speed. You get a speed advantage because of the aerodynamics. Mm-hmm. You're sitting lower. It's a better position, less air drag.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the biggest advantage. The biggest advantage is the comfort. So
of course,
what I've found on when I go on rides with my bike club and they're riding uprights, after 20 or 30 miles, they're beat up. You know, they're tired.
Oh, yeah.
They've been using their energy to hold themselves up off that saddle, off the handlebars, you know. And I'm still fresh.
Right.
And that's where I'm really at the front.
Wow.
So it's not just the aerodynamic advantage, but it's also the comfort advantage. You don't use, you know, as much energy because it's a lot more comfortable. And so for any, you know, any ride over 20 miles, let's say, you've really got them beat. Because they're getting tired and you're fresh.
So what does one have to spend for one of your bikes to be at the front of the pack?
$1,500. That's our
$1,500 would get you to the front of the pack.
Yeah.
Huh. All the way up to how much now for the F40?
Well, the F40, that's $5,000.
Mm-hmm. So for $1,500, though, you'd still be one quick.
Now the F40 is like you'll never see the pack again.
Really? No kidding.
Oh, yeah.
Just an average.
Oh yeah,
average.
They're long gone, way behind you.
Really? If you're just an average roadie. It's like, see you later if you're on
an F40. No, even the best roadies.
Really?
An average rider can get on an F40
and
leave, you know, Lance Armstrong behind.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not kidding.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. Now, is the F40, is that the fully fared? Not fully fared, but.
Yes.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Yeah. Well, your head is sticking out, but otherwise, okay. Yeah, fully fared.
But, and that's a street legal bike.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I ride mine to work every day.
Really? So you could smoke Lance Armstrong, no sweatamos, on an F40?
Oh, yeah.
Even you. Not even you, but you.
Yes.
You yourself could.
Yes.
Wow. Cause I know you're pretty fit. I shouldn't say even you. Wow.
Yeah, not
awesome.
As fit as I used to be. So I'm healthy.
Indeed. So how many different models do you make?
Basically, we have four different models. We have the Phantom, then we have the P38, and we have the RD4, which is a carbon fiber, and the F40.
Okay, so what model
and
is...
The first three are without fairings, and then the F40. Basically, we take the P38, and then we put the full fairing around it.
Hmm. So where would the 38 put you? If you're on the P38, that would put you... without the fairing, are you still leading the pack?
Yeah, and you'll stay with them even if it's hilly, if there's climbs.
Even if it's hilly?
Yeah.
Hmm.
So the Phantom, you'll be leading the pack, you know, on flat ground.
Mm-hmm.
In the hills, it doesn't climb quite as good.
Hmm.
It's a little bit slower on the hill because it's heavier. The frame's not as efficient.
So if someone wants
to speed on the climbs, you'll be back, you know, in the middle of the pack. With the P38, you'll be at the front of the pack, you know, all the way. And then the F40, like I said, you'll never see him again. No, that's exactly how it is. I've done through pride.
That's amazing, man. That's exciting.
Yeah,
that's
and
amazing.
I never see.
Now, with the F40, I know, for example, I've ridden some of Gardner's bikes when he had the body sock on them. And I didn't feel real safe on the road because I didn't really feel like I had that big of a control of the bike, even just with that goofy body sock wrapped around me. Do you feel safe on the road? I mean, do you feel like nothing is at all compromised by the fact you've got all that fairing equipment around you?
No, if anything, it's safer.
Really? Okay.
And you're more visible.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a good point. Indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Awesome. Well, listen. Tell everyone who's listening what your website is, Tim.
It's lightningbikes.com.
Lightningbikes.com.
So it's spelled, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. LightningBikes.
Awesome. Now, what are they going to find when they go there?
Well, on the front page, you'll see all our latest, newest designs. And you'll see, you know, all the models we offer for sale. And you go from there to each, they'll have an individual page that tells you all about the features why the design is so good and all the effort we put into making them, you know, super comfortable, super fast, super efficient. Just to give you the most enjoyable ride out there, the most fun on the road.
Hmm.
Of course, healthy, too.
And
about our history and the races and the records we set.
Uh-huh. And is there any kind of an in-depth analysis of what took place in getting you to be the fastest bike on the planet?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of, you know, we've got charts and graphs that you know, show our advantages. You know, not only just speed, but handling, safety, comfort. You know, we've done a lot of research into all those aspects.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, you know, you could spend probably a whole day because we got like 50 pages on the website.
How many pages?
50.
50. Wow. A lot of stuff.
So there's a lot of information there if you want to just spend, you know, half a day, you know, to analyze all of that.
Wow. All right. So there's a lot of meat. A lot of meat.
Right,
there.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's no fluff. It's all meat.
Got it. Excellent. Well, you know, Tim, I feel blessed that you've been in business for all these years. You've always supported what we've done here at the National Bicycle
Greenway.
Well,
I guess my passion, or maybe it's what I was meant to do. So.
Yeah. And that's along the way, you've always supported what we've done. It's just as neat. I feel very blessed when I get to talk to you and learn more about recumbent bicycles and learn about all the speed successes that you've had along the way. And I think that as you do your passion, you've also supported this dream of an interconnected national bicycle greenway. And that's always been my heart. Feel very full
now,
when
now
I
talk if they
to
would
you.
Do, you know, if you would get that thing built, and then if the Race Across America organization used that to race on, I mean, maybe we could do it in 4 days and avoid all those stoplights.
I love it. Wow.
You know, that's your motivation. I need to do a cross-country record on the Greenway where you have where you get around all the, you know, the auto streets and around.
Right,
you know,
right.
Go
through
all the stop signs and everything.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
That's what I'm working for, you know.
Uh-huh.
That's why I support you guys.
Awesome. I knew there was an ulterior motivation.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, Tim, is there anything else you'd like to add? Anything I didn't cover?
No, that's about it.
That's about it. Well, I'll tell you, it's been a real treat talking
to you. Yeah, just tell all your listeners to, you know, or I should tell them, I guess, to please check out our website, and I think you'll be impressed, and you'll see that it's a great value.
Just one final thought.
If you're going to do any kind of riding, you know, any kind of enjoyment, any kind of distance, this is the way you want to go with the Lightning.
one final thought along those lines. Do you, are you with, are the, do many dealers carry your bike?
We've got about 40 dealers cross country.
40 dealers. Okay.
Yeah.
And so you, they can buy it from you or they can buy it from a dealer?
Exactly.
Great. Okay. Now it makes sense. And then you sail across the country from, and from California to the East Coast, huh?
Yes.
Someone can buy a Lightning. Awesome. Awesome, awesome. Really, it's been a major treat talking to one of the living legends, if you will, of the bicycle industry and bicycle racing. And I just got to say thanks. Thanks for your time, Guy. Really, I mean that.
Well, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity, and it was a pleasure, my pleasure also.
All right, Tim. Thank you, and thank you. I'll talk to you again sometime very soon.
Okay, goodbye, Martin.
Okay, see you later, Tim. Bye-bye.
That wraps up another edition of the National Bicycle Greenways Mountain Movers podcast series. We hope you enjoyed it. This has been NBG director and Awake Again author Martin Krieg. To access this podcast in the future and to hear other shakers and movers that we've interviewed, go to bikeroute.com.